Hello and welcome back to the Unseen Incidents podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and on today's episode, we're talking about the worst transfers of the last 5 years. Which moves ruin their clubs? Then we're opening up the burn book. While over on the paid side, we dig deep into the relegation battle, and it's the return of Am I the Arsehole in Anything But Football. That's all on today's episodes of Unseen Incidents. So we're back for another double bill. Pete, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Happy to be here. Lovely Wednesday night in London. It's actually not a lovely Wednesday night.
No, shit.
I saw an article or a headline today that it rained every single day of 2026. And I swear, like 2 weeks ago, I just texted. I was like walking to work or something, or walking home from work. And I just texted Jess saying, fuck this shit. In reference to like, just, I feel like I'm constantly trudging through rain.
Every
time I leave the house, it's just like pissing rain or some version of like rain, and it just feels relentless. Like I went and picked up Bonnie from nursery about what, 2 hours ago, pissing with rain both ways, and you also have to stand outside as well while they go like fetch them.
Yeah. And also you're just like, this is fucked now, what I'm wearing for the rest of the day. You know, like you get in and you're like, your trousers are soaked or whatever, even if you're wearing like a waterproof coat, which also tends to ruin your fit, because I've been struggling with this at the moment. You know, I'm looking for a new waterproof coat, and I was like, it needs to be a light one that I can take on this trek that I'm doing like next year. But also, like, I don't just want to buy one for that. Like, it would be good if I could wear it normally when it's pissing it down as well. But still, yeah, you just go, you go out because you have to go out when you've got kids. And then you come back and you're like, right, need to peel all this shit off. And now I've just got this bunch of wet clothes in my house that I need to sort out. You've got a baby in a buggy, which like keeping that dry is an absolute nightmare as well. Yeah. Like the whole thing is a disaster. So often, I feel like when you have a kid, another person would get to carry an umbrella. But you're like, no, I have to push this buggy. And so you're just motoring home in the pissing rain, absolutely miserable.
I have I have a golf buggy, you know, where you put your clubs in. And that, and it's got an attachment on it that is built for holding an umbrella. Sure. For that. So I've not taken it off that yet to see if it would fit on the pram. But surely there must be attachments for prams that are just like umbrella holders, because...
Yeah, but it's not going to hold it above your head.
It depends how big the umbrella is.
But it depends. It would need a really long shaft for the umbrella.
But I like, if you have like a big golf umbrella and they're sitting on it's basically the same height as a golf buggy, which sits over my head. Only a little bit, but I guess so.
But it also doesn't give you that much flexibility when you're going along the pavement and you're just like...
None at all.
Like, I don't know how you wouldn't just be taking people out left and right. Those little metal prongs will be at like, you know... eye height.
I fucking hate that too as well, because going through central London in like commuting time,
yeah,
everybody just seems oblivious. And also, like, I'm not a tall guy, but it just feels like every time I'm walking past somebody, their prongs are just eye level with me, and they have no spatial awareness, spatial awareness. They just like kind of walk by, and I'm the one having to make evasive actions to avoid getting hit with their umbrella.
Yeah,
so annoying.
Yeah, like, my point stands on this, man. You should need a license for this.
A license for the umbrella?
You should have to do like an umbrella proficiency course to show that you're not a wanker.
Right. Let's tackle cyclists first and then maybe umbrella holders, because I feel they're in the same category with this.
I find umbrella holders to be a much bigger danger to me, especially because people always have those old umbrellas, you know, where the little bobbles have come off the edge of the spikes. And then I'm like, you're kind of holding it. It's just like a shiv. You're just like waving a shiv at me. I don't know what it is, but like some people, I think just, I always say to Emma, I was like, this is because you didn't play rugby at school. I don't think it's that. But you know, like in rugby, they're like, you need to like go where the space is. The ball should go where the space is.
Yeah.
And I think like the idea of like, this is a closed space and therefore you should move towards the open space is like, I think sports are quite good for teaching you general spatial awareness and this stuff generally. And so quite often when someone's going along, they're just like waving their umbrella, they don't seem to realize they're just fucking taking people out. I think, did you not play sports in school and get an understanding of like when people are close to you and when you need to move away? But maybe they're just knobs.
I just think people are idiots.
I think people are idiots as well. Yeah. And my therapist is always like, maybe people aren't idiots, you know, like maybe there are reasons why they are the way they are. And I'm like, that's true.
But have you met people?
But I say to you, I'm like, I understand your point intellectually.
I understand your incorrect point of
but
view.
But emotionally, I'm like, no, most people are idiots.
Yeah, I think
when someone put a bag of like dog shit in my bin outside, And I was like, in theory, would be fine. It's a bin. Yeah. Like, sure. But if you're walking your dog near my house, you know that the council don't take rubbish unless it's in a bin bag. So when you put that bin bag, like that tiny little dog shit bag, you know they won't take it. They'll just take the big refuse sacks that are in the bin. And so at the end of the week, I'm like, oh, there are two bags of like dog shit in the bottom of my bin. Mm-hmm. What do I do with these? That's fucking selfish. That's fucking selfish. Like, I don't understand how people can behave that way. I would never behave that way. And I'm a wanker. Like, so I don't get it at all. It's so fucking, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, am I going to have to be this person who runs out the front door when I see someone do it and says like, don't put your fucking rubbish in my bin. But I will do it if I see them. But that makes, I don't want to have to do that. I just want people to not be knobs. Like, why do it? It's so fucking rude. I don't get it. Fucking stupid.
Also, just carry it. Like, how long does a dog walk? Just carry it until you get him. Or to, like, a public bin.
Yeah, there are public bins nearby. Exactly. Yeah. I know. I'm like, how far are you walking your dog?
Yeah. Like, you're not out for 3 hours on a trek. You're in, like, zone 2 London. You're going to be going out for, like, 25, 30 minutes max.
And my principle with this stuff is the same way that, like, I actually don't really care what people do until they inconvenience me.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know, sometimes you're waiting at the crossing of the road and somebody comes and they kind of like shove their way through to get to the front. And I know some people object to that. And I think, I don't care so long as I'm not delayed. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in front of me so long as I don't move backwards. Like, I'm still where I was, right?
Yeah.
You're now in front of me, but you aren't allowed to get in front of me and then walk slowly or get in my way. Similarly, like, I don't mind if somebody puts something in my bin so long as they put it in the bin in a way that it will be taken by the council. So I'm not now cleaning up after their fucking dog. Like, that's the part of it where I'm just like, I'm actually not your dad, believe it or not. Like, I don't think this is fucking okay. And okay, maybe you're busy and something came up at the last minute and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is the kind of shit my therapist says. And I'm like, something's coming up for me. I've got two children. I'm walking with two children on my way to school when I realize that, like, I'm putting the bag in the bin ready for the council to come and take it. And I look in and there are just like bags of dog shit in there. So I'm fucking busy. I've got a child in each hand. This is bullshit. So, I mean, this is basically my Burbank entry. You know, like, I could just pay this forward and like pop it in the Burbank in advance. But look, let's calm it down. Let's calm it down. Because we've got some questions today. We've got questions over here. We've got questions on the paid side. This question today comes from Cristobal Gonzalez. And he says, is it Cristobal or is it Cristobal? I don't know. Hang on. No, it's Cristobal.
Cristobal.
It's Cristobal. I know that my pronunciation isn't good, but the emphasis is on the I.
I feel like
Balenciaga.
I mean, you're talking to the entirely wrong person about this. To me, those are the same word.
Sure.
Cristobal.
Yeah, okay. But what about if I said Christopher or Christopher? You'd be those are different.
I agree that they sound different, but to me, it's just like Cristobal.
Have you never met one of those people who puts the emphasis in the wrong part of a word?
The emphasis, and
the emphasis. Yeah, when they're like, oh, did you watch that on the TV last night? And I'm like, excuse me. Do you mean the TV?
I've just long accepted that Northern Irish people either say things funny in terms of the intonation or just the way their accent makes things sound. So I've kind of stopped overtly trying. So things have slightly changed in how I say things since I've moved to England. So I used to say genuine instead of genuine. Yeah.
That's a real I'm Irish thing.
But
to say.
I go home and I just hear everybody saying genuine, and yeah, I had no idea that other people said genuine until I got to England. Or I don't know if I didn't have any idea; it just wasn't something that I was aware of.
But that's like a dialect choice, you know. As in, so for example, in British English, you would use a lot of words that are, when you've got two words that look exactly the same, but one is an adjective and one is a verb, the verb normally has the emphasis on the second syllable. So, for example, something can be frequent, but if you go somewhere, you frequent it. Yeah. But that's not true in American English. Like, in American English, it's perfectly correct to say to frequent something.
Well, yeah. But that's English light.
But that
it's the unpaid version of English.
It's English if you stopped thinking in the 17th century. but that's perfectly fine when it's a dialect choice. Like, so I think like genuine, like when you're speaking Northern Irish English, is completely fine.
Northern Irish English.
Yeah.
Which I love the spirit of that's different to British English as well.
You're goddamn right.
We're not only deep in semantics, we're deep in politics as well. This podcast got range.
We cover so much ground. Maybe some of that ground should be our topics for today. Yeah, so anyway, Cristobal says, what do you consider the top three worst transfers of the last 5 years? With Calvin Phillips headed to the Championship and Douglas Luiz somehow back at Villa, curious what transfers have ended up being both expensive and objectively terrible. You put some stuff in the doc here, and I then started doing my research. And it was one of those things where I started doing it, and then I looked back at your research, and I was like, oh, we've got like four of the same five.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely undeniable four of the same five. I think the one place that we might get into a serious debate, well, two places. One is the order, like I say, and the other is the fifth spot.
Mm.
Because the ones you got here, I mean, should we start at the top?
Yeah.
So has to be in there, Lukaku from Inter to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
So this was like, this was the move that was meant to happen earlier. So obviously there was the time when Lukaku went to United and Morata went to Chelsea.
Yeah.
And it did feel at the time like stylistically that was the wrong way around. Like Lukaku should have gone to Chelsea. Plus, of course, he had that history with Chelsea. And so it felt like the one he really wanted was Chelsea. Anyway, didn't work out for United, goes off to Italy. And then at a certain point, Chelsea are like, we need a striker. And despite having Thomas Tuchel there, who clearly wants a striker who is skillful, technical, good at hold-up play, you know, who's got some of the sort of midfieldery qualities that you get in certain strikers. Chelsea just went out and bought him, Romelu Lukaku, for nearly £100 million. It was £97.5 million. And how old was he at the time? I think he was 28. 28.
He was like, he was peak to post-peak.
Yeah.
And I guess we talk a bit more about age curves now than then, but this was still 2021. This wasn't like 2014. Mm. It was a huge outlay for a guy who, yeah, was 28, coming in his post-peak years, and was a very specific type of striker coming in to basically a scenario where he needs the team to be built around him, and a manager completely unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
And like, it didn't turn out very well.
Yeah, like Tuchel, nobody was totally content with like using Kai Havertz as a striker. And I do get that because like Kai Havertz has never been super prolific. But I think, again, there was this idea that like the striker needs to score all the goals. And for certain coaches, that's just not the case, right?
Yeah.
Like Tuchel was quite happy, I think, with Havertz as this facilitating guy who was capable of running in behind, you know, and like getting on the end of moves, but who was really more comfortable dovetailing with a bunch of creative midfielders. And when they brought in Lukaku, even if it felt it was going to be an upgrade in those in the striking department, you know, the actual goal scoring department, it was obviously going to be a downgrade in all the other departments. And it wasn't like a trade-off, like, okay, we're adding another piece to the squad, and in certain games we'll use this, and in certain games we'll use somebody else. It was, we are spending £100 million on him, and we are giving him one of the most extraordinary wages. Like, they were paying him over 300k a week. Like, you've got here in your research that only four players were earning more in the Premier League that season.
Yeah.
So Ronaldo, insane. De Bruyne, David De Gea, and Varane, which, by the way,
which is funny. It's funny in itself.
But Chelsea were paying pay every minute money. I mean, also, yeah, the age he was, I guess, necessitated that. But now, you know, like, okay, Arsenal spent over 60 million on Gyökeres, right? If Gyökeres ends up being a kind of rotation striker, that'll be seen as a big failure. But Gyökeres is 2 years younger than Lukaku was and cost nearly £40 million less.
And also, I feel that if this was in this window, the equivalent would be more like £125, £130 million.
Yeah.
Even though this is only like 5 years ago.
But what I'm saying is like we would look at that outcome with Gyökeres in the long term and say that's a real like misstep. Arsenal could have used that money better. And Chelsea spent 1.5 times that money on an older player, paying him more money. And I don't know, like, there was also just this weird, like, it never quite meshed. Even when Lukaku was on the pitch, he wasn't really scoring very much.
Yeah.
He also was kind of weirdly bolshy, like, had these issues with like, how Tuchel was setting up the team. I mean, I can understand if he felt like he was being scapegoated, but, like, it was very clear from the moment he arrived that Tuchel was like, you are not the guy for me.
Yeah.
And Lukaku clearly resented that. But I
think he was like, I can kind of see it from Lukaku's side more than Tuchel's side, because if he'd come in being bought for nearly £100 million, put on He's the fifth highest earning player in this entire league. To also at peak age, like from that perspective, I think he came in being like, I'm going to be one of the temples of this squad. The squad's going to be built around me and to facilitate me. They're paying like title challenging money here for me to come in and be a huge seismic needle mover. And then he comes in and it's like, actually, you know, you're going to either fit in the system or you're not going to feature at all. And the results were just super, super underwhelming. Like he had 8 goals, I think, that season. So basically, he was there for about 12 months. Within those 12 months, they already tried to ship him out on loan desperately to try and get money off the books to anybody to take him. He got 8 goals, 7 expected goals that season. His XG per 90 were the lowest of his career apart from his first season at Everton, which was like 0.001 lower per 90. So he basically his output was the worst of his career since expected goals began. And this is a guy that arrived for £100 million on around £17 million in wages per year, not including bonuses. So you're probably looking about 20-something, or like £20 million a year for a guy who got 8 goals, 7 expected goals in 17 league 90s and clearly just didn't fit what Tuchel was trying to do, or Tuchel didn't want. And for him to have been turned around within 12 months to try and find another suitor is just, it's such a huge like ball drop that they brought him in. And they to be fair to them, they did all right at shifting him off the books when they loaned him out. I think he took a 40% pay cut to go back to Inter and then a £7 million a year pay cut to go to Roma. So I do think they managed to shift a ton of that like £17 million a year outlay on his wages on those loans. But yeah, I mean, like he went to Napoli a couple of years ago for £25 million at 30. So from 28 to 30, he's dropped from £100 million to £25 million. I guess you could argue that they saved £40 million odd pounds across the two seasons that he was loaned out. But yeah, 31-year-old for £25 million, bought for £100 million and had absolutely or virtually no impact on the pitch. It's a really disappointing transfer based on what the money outlaid for him, and he was quality at points. Like he was good in Serie A, but yeah, it was a strange one, and it has to go down as one of the worst transfers of Premier League era.
Yeah, the saving grace really is that they could shift him, and that they didn't just shift him for nothing. They shifted him for money. Like that is the one that like that's the thing. I'm putting a pin in all of these until we get to the end, and then we'll order them. I mean, the total cost I think probably ended up, I kind of ballparked it about 89 million. I think when you take the money off and you account for like wages covered and blah, 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 getting him off the books, like that's a fucking lot of money. But given that they spent like 100 million up front, it's not that terrible. It could have been way, way worse. Real Madrid spent more on like Eden Hazard than that.
Yeah.
But I think he doesn't quite meet this cutoff, I think.
If they weren't able to shift his wages on those loans and they got like basically nothing for him back, this would be like catastrophic. I think they've managed to scramble back a little bit of decency in trying to get him out the door and like how they got him out the door.
Yeah, so I mean, should we go on to the next one then? Because the next one is Antony.
Yeah.
And obviously like, look, this situation, even just on football terms, this would be bad. But it's exacerbated by the fact he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And he should go to fucking prison.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, at one point, United would probably be like, if he goes to prison, we can cancel this contract.
Yeah.
But look, I don't mean to make light of it. Like he is a legit piece of shit. But in football terms, like they paid £85 million for him when he was 22, going on 23, after 3 years in the Eredivisie. And this was obviously in that summer that they were like, who would our new Dutch manager like? A bunch of guys who played in the Eredivisie. They spent like, he and Martinez are still two of the top four. Like he's the most expensive player ever signed from the Eredivisie. Mm-hmm. And Martinez is fourth. And Martinez is good, but he's not that good. Not least because he's injured all the time.
And yeah,
United spent huge fees on both of them. But like the thing about
Martinez is only like 60 mil.
That's a lot for a defender out of the Eredivisie who's like 5'3".
But he has been good when he's played. I think if he was fit, I think that fee is completely fair. The issue is his fitness.
Sure, but that's a part of like how good you are. And also, I don't know. I would still be like, are you one of the best centre backs in the league?
I don't think £60 million is one of the best centre backs in the league.
I would expect one of the best centre backs in the league for that.
How
many centre backs are there in the league who cost £60 million?
I would say City have two. I mean, it depends on age, right? Because like Van Dijk would have been that, not anymore.
It costs more than that.
Not now. Do you mean like when they were bought, like when he was yeah. bought, yes, but now he would not be worth £60 million just based on age.
Sure, but Van Dijk cost over £60 million. I think Ruben Diaz was somewhere in that region, maybe.
Yeah, maybe so the question is whether they're being bought for £60 million or worth £60 million. I'm saying
no. The question is who's been even bought for that amount of money.
Sure, I think there's a reasonable outlay in the terms of who's been bought for £60 million+ as a defender in the Premier League, but I think there have been players, many players across the top six specifically, who have been worth more than £60 million at some stage of their career.
Yeah, but okay. But if you're buying someone at £60 million, then they have to be one of the best centre-backs in the league over the last like 5-10 years in order to be worth that outlay. Otherwise, you've paid more than they're worth, right? Like you ideally want to pay market value or less for a player. If you're paying £60 million pounds for a player and he ends up being, you know, the kind of player who you think maybe he was worth £45 million, then that was not a good deal for you. Like this is what I'm saying. And I just look at, if I'm paying like £60 million for a centre back, Fofana cost over £60 million. You know, that's a bad one. But I do basically expect someone to be like Guardiola, like maybe not Van Dijk, but I expect them to be one of the superior centre backs in the league. And I think Martinez, when he plays, is very good. I think he's very good. I think there are a lot of United fans who think he's incredible, and I think he's very good.
I would say he's top 10 centre back in the league.
I agree. I think top 10 is fine.
But I think that merits £60 million. I still think that's one of the best centre backs in the Premier League.
I don't. Like, I just think you can get. You shouldn't pay that for a centre back out of the Eredivisie, especially given that at the time he had so many question marks over
him.
Well,
yeah, it was like, where's he going to play as well? Is he going to play left back? Is he going to play DM? Is he big enough? Is he strong enough? All of that stuff.
Yeah, and actually at the beginning, like, he was not those things, and that, like, he had some pretty ropey games at the beginning, and then he settled.
I agree.
And then he's been injured a lot, so you're like, actually, the value you've got out of him is like nothing.
But I think unless the data in the Eredivisie and the scouting show that he, you know, like the Isak argument, a guy who's historically missed like 40% of leagues of sure. seasons. If that was in the data, then yeah, okay, it's significant overpayment. I don't think there were those indicators to say that he was going to be super injured as much as he has been at United. I think that's fortune.
I agree, but at the same time, it's easier to get unlucky with a transfer when you're paying top of market.
Yeah, well, like there's more risk.
If you pay top of market, everything has to, you know, but not just that. Like, if you pay top of market, then like everything has to go right
for it to break even, basically. Yeah.
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 And same with Isak right now. Like, a bunch of things have gone wrong, and so they'll probably never break even on that deal. Like, just in player value, I guess. Like with Martinez, hard to break even given how injured he's been. Yeah. And if they'd paid like £35 million, I'd be like, you know what, whatever. You pay £35 million, which would have been a lot at the time, but if you pay £35 million and he gets injured a lot, like, okay, tough shit. But when you pay £60 million and he's injured all the time, then I do kind of feel... Well, you're kind of getting fucked there, like, and you shouldn't have paid so much money.
I kind of feel like £60 million for United is like £45 million for most other clubs.
I don't know what that means.
I just think that their ability to stomach bad overpayments is greater than most other clubs in the world. Shown by the fact that we've considered like multiple Manchester United players on this list.
Yeah, though of course it does then have a knock-on effect on the pitch. You know, like it hamstrings them. Like that summers come and go where United are like, we can't do anything unless someone buys Joshua Zirkzee. Like we're fucked. United should never be in that position. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Like yeah. I think Martinez, like the thing is, if I say that that was too much now after his injuries, you're also saying it's okay now after you've seen him settle well in the Premier League. And the point is, at the time United paid that money, they had had no way of knowing he'd settle in the Premier League. They're, like, a defender from the Eredivisie is always a gamble. And actually, when Arsenal paid like 42, I think, for Timber, Arsenal got way more shit about it. Like there was much bigger like kind of outcry about paying that money for a defender from the Eredivisie than there was when United paid nearly 60 for Martinez, and especially then when Timber sat out a year with injury. But Timber now has pretty much paid that back because he's pretty much an ever present for Arsenal. Martinez is still injured all the time now. I agree that United aren't necessarily on the hook for that, but I do think that's why you don't pay a ton of money. Like, that's why you try and keep the money low. It's like Spurs yeah. fans saying, oh, poor us, like James Maddison's always injured. Well, it's not really like that. Or maybe like Solanke. They're like, oh, what are we going to do? Solanke's injured. We spent our £60 million striker isn't fit. Like, what are we going to do? And you're like, not spend £60 million on that striker. Like, if you can't do without that player,
that one
player, then you shouldn't spend £60 million on them. You should buy a couple of players.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, Anthony. The thing about Anthony is, at the time, I remember doing videos with like Doogie and stuff. Even then, we were kind of like, what's the deal with this guy? Like, he had pretty good goal numbers, goal and assist numbers. He had 32 and 41 90s at Ajax. But even then, I remember we were looking at his shot locations and his XG, and his XG was like not that great in the Netherlands. His shot locations were really bad. Like, he's always liked that one pocket to shoot from. And to be fair, I think he's an above average shooter from there.
But in that one specific game scenario.
And he doesn't get good shots elsewhere.
Yeah.
And you're moving from a league that has, no offense, the Eredivisie, dog shit goalkeepers to the best league in the world. Like, you're going to have to place those shots really nicely. But he did score some of them.
But I mean, also, if everybody knows that that's the one thing you want to do, you want to get on the ball and you want to cut in on your left foot in zone 15 and hit a shot from just outside the box. Very easy to defend against if you're a decent defender, because you know it's coming. And also, you know that he's not overly fast or a very good dribbler.
Well, that's the crazy stuff that we were like, so what does this guy do?
Yeah.
Like, he gets okay shot volume, but not good shot locations. He's not a plus creator. He's not a volume dribbler. He certainly, you could even see watching him in the Eredivisie that he was no real athlete. No. Like, he wasn't. If I'm signing a player from the Eredivisie, I want to sign someone who's either the most special passer you've ever seen. I mean, an attacker who's either like the most special passer you've ever seen, or who is so clearly head and shoulders above the league in athleticism. Like, when Chelsea bought Noni Madueke, which was also a bit of an overpay at the time, especially because of his injury record. But when he was on the pitch in the Eredivisie, he was so much better than everybody. Like, he was his expected goal and assist numbers were through the roof. His dribble numbers were through the roof. His progressive carrying into the penalty area through the roof. And when you just saw him face up an Eredivisie defender, you were like, he's faster and stronger than this guy. And he will go past him 9 times out of 10. And that's what I want if I'm signing someone from the Eredivisie. Like, I need that. And with Anthony, you're just like, this guy's just not that good at anything. He's just like a guy.
Yeah.
And he arrives in the Premier League, and all of that is just way worse. You're like, yeah, he can't dribble.
No.
But he's weirdly like a twat about it. Like,
yeah, he's weirdly arrogant.
Yeah, and everyone was like, this guy sucks. His touch isn't good. He's not a good shooter generally. He doesn't get shots. He's not creative. He's not a one-on-one threat.
Black hole in possession.
Oh my God. I just remember there were games. I remember some game, honestly, Arsenal were playing United. I think we might have had Zinchenko at left back or something. You know, so like not a great defensive fullback.
Not necessarily, not a lockdown left back.
But I just remember being like, don't worry about it. It's fine. Like, as soon as a team can basically say that flank is fine, don't worry about it, you're in trouble. And Anthony, it was just a disaster. I mean, the only good thing about it is that they were able to sell him. They were able to sell him in the end for about 20 mil. So it brings it down a bit. And also, his wages were high because they're high when you buy someone for 85 mil, but they weren't high, like, they weren't paying him superstar money. They weren't paying him, like, you know, $250,000 a week. It wasn't like, as we'll come on to later, Jadon Sancho, where they were like, we are paying you an absolute fortune. It's just a bit of a disastrous move, and United were lucky to get out from under it, but maybe give him a bit of credit for finding a loan that kind of got him, you know, I guess, like, showcased his best abilities, and also that they took that money. You know, I think in the end, taking 20 mil for him, because United have in the past sometimes held out. You know, like, you remember with Jesse Lingard, where they were like, we're holding out. We're holding out for a really big fee for Jesse Lingard, and just like no one wanted it. And with Anthony, they were like, 20 mil on the table, we're taking that shit.
And they did it with Harry Maguire as well, which is kind of, he's been decent this season as well, but that whole West Ham move came crumbling down because they're like, nah, we want more for this player, for this player that we don't use.
Yeah, and I think Harry Maguire's okay, but we can debate the wisdom of, like, you know, would it have been better for United to just take the money that was on the table and think about what was next? Because Maguire is on bigger money. Like, I think there's probably a good argument to make for that. Anyway, do you want to take the third one?
Yeah, I mean, this one is, for me, is a slam dunk as you can get. This is Mikhailo Mudryk from Shakhtar to Chelsea. Arrived just under £90 million in 2023, January 2023, I think it was, which is wild money for a bloke coming out of Ukraine. And it wasn't even that he had, like, huge sample sizing in Ukraine. It wasn't that he had seasons of digestible data. He had under 1,000 league minutes in every season he played in Ukraine. And admittedly, he had 21 goal involvements in 1990s in Shakhtar, which is promising for a 21-year-old. But the fact that Chelsea paid nearly £90 million for him is absolutely like finished article money for a player that was, one, nowhere near that, and two, there was nothing that necessarily showed, or not enough, the sample size wasn't big enough to show that this guy could really pay this back, or this guy could turn into a player who is worth us spending £90 million now as a 21-year-old. They gave him a huge contract, 100k a week base for 8.5 years. This was right in the middle of Chelsea and Bowley's, like, we're going to amortize these contracts over like decades and like loophole the system and all that nonsense. And Mudryk arrived, didn't really do anything. 5 goals, 4 assists, and 27 90s. He's contracted up to 2031, by the way, when he'll be 30.
So this he could get this 4-year ban.
Yeah.
Sit it out.
Yeah.
And come back with a year left on his contract.
It's an insanely long contract on 6 figures as well, a week base. And there was just really nothing other than his numbers being, okay, sure, 21 goal involvement in 1990s as a 21-year-old is promising, but it's in Shakhtar, it's in Ukraine, and he's not playing hugely frequently. He's like under 1,000 league minutes per season. And they put so much cash on the table for him, attached themselves to him for 8.5 years on big wages. And basically, the only thing that I saw that people, when it happened, were like, oh, but, you know, he's really fast. It's like, who cares? Like, Dan James is really fast. Doesn't matter if you're just really fast. You need to be able to do something with it. And yeah, like, at this stage, that alone would be, I would say, enough merit for him to be on this list without the things that that followed. So if we just took that,
yeah,
money paid, data available in scouting, performance in the Premier League alone, wages and contract length, if we just took that in a little capsule, that would be enough to merit a place on this list. That's before we get to his doping ban, which is now, he's obviously been charged by the FA for a doping violation, facing a ban up to 4 years, like you said. Chelsea currently have him suspended at the minute. There hasn't been a judgment on it, but he could face a 4-year ban. He's a crap player, costing loads of money, and now they can't even really sell him. And at this stage, a guilty verdict would kind of be the best case scenario for Chelsea, because they could just terminate his contract. And it's difficult, because if they do find him guilty and ban him for 4 years, like you said, he comes back with another year on his contract, and he'll have sat for 5 years just in the wilderness on a huge amount of money. I guess it depends how much Chelsea have to pay for this. Or sorry, if he gets found not guilty, he comes back and is sitting on this huge contract. If he gets found guilty, I guess like the saving grace of Chelsea will be able to cut ties legally, because they're like breach of contract, all that stuff. They will kind of get off, not scot-free, but they won't be on the hook until 2031 for who would then be a 30-year-old useless player on huge money. So yeah, I think in a weird way, the best case scenario for Chelsea is that he just gets found guilty and gets banned, and they can just kind of erase him from Stamford Bridge.
I mean, even then,
I think it's the best case of a very bad scenario, though, still.
Oh yeah, and even then, I tried to cost it out, and I got to 98 million.
98 million best case scenario.
98 million is if he gets banned and they can cancel the contract.
Fucking hell.
If he gets banned and they can't cancel the contract and he comes back and does the last year, then it'll be 128 million. No, it won't. What am I talking about? It'll be another 5 and a bit million. So it'd be like 104 million, let's call it. Like this, that's where we are with that. And with absolutely nothing to show for it. Absolutely nothing. If he gets cleared and they have to pay him, then they could try and pay him off. They'd have to pay him like 30 mil to get him off the books. If they were just going to pay out his remaining wages, be another 30 mil. So worst case scenario, this all costs them 128 million. Like, that's the kind of max they could lose on this. 128 million, man.
For a player out of Ukraine with very little to show for it at 21.
This is why you don't give these long deals, man. Like, it's the same thing. Like, Wesley Fofana, really good player. When he plays, he looks good. But he costs you 80 mil and you've got him signed up for 1 million years. Mudryk, absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
Never plays, like, because he's in the crack house. Like, you... absolute fortune, and it's gone wrong for another reason. And people can say, oh well, we never knew this guy was going to get injured, and we never knew this guy was going to be, like, you know, like on gear. But at the same time, shit does happen, And having manageable length contracts means that you can fuck these guys off back to Siberia.
I swear every contract that the club wanted, like 10 years ago, the club wanted contracts for like 3-4 years, Mac. Every agent was pushing like, no, 4 or 5 years. And 5 year kind of became the default contract.
Yeah.
And then Chelsea just came out of like left field being like, we're going to offer these guys 8 year contracts, 9 year contracts, so that we can like amortize their fee over all of this stretched period of time. Mm. And it means that we stay like maximally maneuverable in the market and all of this stuff. They tried to like, they overthought the market basically and thought that they were finding a loophole and kind of cheating the system, and they've just fucked themselves.
And they thought, I think, well, part of the way we tried to justify this at the time was we were kind of like, okay, they're giving Mudryk 100k to start with, which is high now.
But he'll never renegotiate.
And if he becomes a star, then you get a star through his entire career on 100k a week, which is like amazing. But then they didn't even do that. They gave Cole Palmer a new deal. When he was good, they gave him more money.
Within like, and I was like, 18 months.
That's the opposite of what you do with all these fucking people.
Defeats the purpose. You're like,
sorry, brother, you've got a contract until the end of recorded time.
Yeah.
We are not giving you any more money. And instead, they didn't do that. So even our like, I will try and see this through the most rose-tinted glasses possible, like it didn't even then align with reality. It was giving them too much credit even then. This is an absolute fucking disaster. Like the fact that, as you said, you can assume this all goes perfectly for Chelsea and they manage to get out. Like, imagine if you get handed something that gets you out from under a contract. Like if something had happened such that like, you know, United could have just like said goodbye to Antony 2 years in.
Yeah.
Or Arsenal could have just said goodbye to Nicola Pepe after 18 months. You know, or Chelsea could have said bye to Kepa. Bye-bye, you don't cost us any more money from now on. They would have been delighted.
Yeah.
And Chelsea might get something that gets them out of the last 5 years of an 8.5 year contract, and they will still be eating £100 million on this guy for nothing, for no return. This one is just absolute calamity and completely avoidable. Like, the thing is, like, Lukaku was avoidable and was a bad fit, and that's part of why it's like, we're factoring stupidity into these, right? So Lukaku was stupid, but at least Lukaku was a good footballer. Antony was stupid because anybody could have told you he was not that good a footballer. Mudryk was a complete, like, question mark.
Yeah.
No one had any clue what he was. He was literally just run fast. Like, he wasn't even kick ball straight. He was just run fast.
In Ukraine as well.
Yeah, run fast in Ukraine. Complete nothing.
Yeah.
And Arsenal wanted him, you know, and Chelsea was so delighted to like get him over them in the same way that like when United got Fred instead of Man City, you know, or whatever. Like it kind of feels like one of those things where it's like, yeah, we went and got the guy that you wanted. And you're like, okay, brother, like fucking fill your boots. Okay. Well, shall we do the last one? And then I think these will be our top four, right? And we can order them.
Yeah.
And then you and I can maybe debate the fifth place. Because the last one is Jadon Sancho. So Jadon Sancho, I've got to be honest, this move has been a disaster and he's out of contract this summer. So they're going to see nothing back on this.
Yeah.
They've managed to shift him quite a bit and like get some wages paid on loan. So I still have got the total investment at around £113 million on a guy who's played just under 41-90s for them in the league.
Yeah.
That's pretty poor.
That's not great.
That is not good. However, in United's defense, he was homegrown. He was 21. He had absolutely incredible numbers. Incredible numbers.
Yeah.
Like, he did seem to have everything except top-level athleticism. And In United's defense, the league was trending that way. And maybe they would have... Now, we'd all say, oh, well, of course, if you're buying a player from the Bundesliga, like, one of the things you need to think about is, like, is he going to be fast enough and strong enough in the Premier League? But one of the reasons we say that is Jadon Sancho. So, to be fair, at the time, we looked at United and we were like, well, he's faster than the average 10. He might be slower than some wingers, but he's not, like, the slowest man on earth. Like, he'll be okay. He looked like a special passer. His shot numbers were decent. Like, he just looked like he would be a useful player in some position for United. And admittedly, they didn't really have a plan for what that position would be. They kind of tried him in a bunch of roles. But, like, I think it's a defensible transfer. Just because, like, everyone at the time would have bought him, I think. Maybe Liverpool or something. Maybe there's some smart club that wouldn't. But everybody at the time would have been like, yes, we would love to have Jadon Sancho, even if it's very expensive.
Yeah, I think like this is one of the more defensible ones, even though like this is the way this has worked out has been truly astonishingly bad, but shockingly so. I don't think anybody, when Jadon Sancho joined Manchester United, imagined it would have gone this way, or imagined that the lack of impact would have been so stark, even with questions about his physicality in the league, because he was just fantastic in the Bundesliga. He had 87 goal involvements in 94-90s, mostly as a teenager as well. Like his first season in the Bundesliga, he was 17. I think he left when he was 21. So in the Bundesliga, he was averaging nearly 0.7 expected goal involvements per 90 as an under-21-year-old in a European top five league. Like, that's good stuff. That is something that you're like, okay, you know what? This kid could be the real deal. Like you say, he was English, homegrown, came out of City's academy as well, which is like generally a kind of nice little rubber stamp to have. They do create some quite good players. And everything kind of trended being like, he will have a use. He will be a good player in the Premier League. Yeah, sure, it was a lot of money, £75 million. But at that age, homegrown, versatile attacker, you're like, okay, I can see why teams would be interested in bringing him to the Premier League. The issue is that became very clear was that he just doesn't have an elite string in his bow. Like, he's not super fast. He's not super strong. He's not wildly creative in passing. Like, he's good, but he's not wildly amazing as a creator. He's not amazingly clinical. He's not a unbelievable kind of like impact dribbler like Doku. He's good in tight spaces, but there are a lot of things he's pretty good at, and he's good enough at enough of those things to stand out in the Bundesliga. But I think when you lose a kind of like transitional style of Bundesliga football, when it becomes more physical, when you have less space to work in, when the average skill level that you're coming up against week in, week out, individually and as a team, is just higher, like you're not playing farmers at the bottom end of the Bundesliga anymore, it just become, the margins become so fractional and so tight that without something elite, some elite string in his bow, that just meant that he really struggled to actually impact games, to be for long periods of time like a guy in the United squad who's going to be one of the difference makers. And we saw it in his influence on the pitch, and the numbers are just underwhelming. And he's on like 250k a week, like, or he was at that stage. It's been shifted, I guess, across to the loan teams, but he was on big wages, finished article money. I get the gamble based on how kind of prolific he was as such a young talent in the Bundesliga. I get the gamble way more than I get some of the other people we've just spoken about. I just think that the way it worked out, and the cautionary, he is kind of the cautionary tale of, can this player cut it in a more physical league, and can they meet the demands of the physical demands of the Premier League, and can their numbers, say, drop by like 35% coming out of the Bundesliga, the Premier League, and still look like he's worth £75 million. If the answer is yes on both of those accounts, then it's, you know, a signing that's worth considering. If he comes up as no on either of those counts, then I think you should reconsider. And I think Jadon Sancho, the way it has gone so catastrophically poorly, and kind of shockingly so, from if we were sitting here talking about this move in whenever, what would have been, 2022? If we were sitting here then talking about this, I would have been incredibly shocked back then when the move happened, to learn how it went in real life.
Yeah, I think it's just totally possible that he could have been like Cherki, you know, like Cherki has arrived and just looks like totally fine, despite actually being kind of similar, like super technician. I mean, more of a special passer.
I think his creation's way better than Sancho's. Yeah,
yeah, but he's also slower than Sancho. You know, like,
but Sancho's not fast enough to make a difference, in my opinion. So it's like,
sure, but my point is that, but my point is
slower
that
than too slow is still slow. You know what I mean?
It's possible to buy a really technical player who, like, but Cherki's not too slow. Is the thing?
But you know what I mean? It's like slower than slow is still slow. If you know what I mean? And that, like, Sancho's not fast enough to be fast. So I don't think it matters that Cherki's slower than Sancho, because they're both slow.
But it's not a disqualifying factor for Cherki.
No. I just don't think it's there's much merit in saying that Cherki's even slower than Sancho, when, you know, it's like when one's like a 4 out of 10 and one's a 5 out of 10 in one metric, it's not really defining or a difference maker.
Yeah, but the thing that we all tend to pin the failure of Sancho on is like the athleticism, because like technically he's fine, and the thing is, like, his technicality might have been just good enough to make it okay. Like, even now, if we go back and we try and say, like, they did get this guy who was just like not that fast, he didn't have that top end like ability to get separation, it's feasible that United could have been like, well, he came in and he was just so good in tight spaces that it just didn't matter at all. Like, United City could have brought Cherki in this summer and been like, wow, he's amazing technically, but like, he can't get away from people. Like, it doesn't matter how shifty he is, people will just like muscle him off the ball and take it from him. But his technicality is high enough that it's okay. And similarly, you know, with Sancho, I think like, if he'd arrived and he'd been like the wrong fit for United, but he'd gone to like Chelsea on loan or Villa on loan this season, and he had been like played in more of an attacking midfield role and shown his ability to wriggle out of trouble and create, then we'd have said, okay, the issue was the fit rather than the player. So I just think it's hard to complete. It's just very hard to be that critical of United on this one. Like, they didn't have a plan to develop him, as they never do. But I do feel for them a bit, because it was a completely understandable move.
Yeah, I agree.
So if I'm ranking these, those top four, I think I go Mudryk worst.
I agree.
Antony, Lukaku, Sancho.
I think Sancho's the four. I think Sancho's four and Mudryk's one. I think those two are nailed on. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, at least Lukaku had been proven as a good, like, Lukaku had Premier League pedigree, proven ability to be a good number nine in the Premier League. And he was only, what, like, £13 million more than what United paid for Antony, who was coming out of the Eredivisie. Yeah, I would say Mudryk, Antony, Lukaku, Sancho.
Okay, I'm fine with that. For number five, who have you got?
I considered Joao Felix to Chelsea. I considered Andre Onana to United. That was a good amount of money. Maybe I'll put that one in. I get Calvin Phillips as well. I mean, Andre Onana, sticking with United, terrible. Another signing that was kind of part of that influenced by Ajax era of Ten Hag. And there was a fair amount of money. What was it? It was like 60-odd million from AC, from Inter. And it was meant to be transformative. I was very upbeat. I remember seeing a podcast episode on it when it happened. And I was pretty upbeat about him being like, a Champions League level goalkeeper who was good at ball playing and was like this next era of United going forward. And it was just a terrible, terrible move that never really got off the ground. He was very costly, very error filled, and it was kind of everyone harkened back to like David De Gea, early era David De Gea, who was pretty problem prone, mistake prone in his first season or two, but he was younger and less proven at the time. And Anna was coming from like a Champions League final, I think, the season before, and a fantastic season in that. And I think you can just tell when you see how particularly with the goalkeeper, when you see them, see how they command their box, see what they're doing, see how they act and stuff. Onana just looks scared all the time. And David De Gea kind of did in his first season or so, but there was just very little redeeming features about Onana in the end. And even when he went off to Galatasaray?
I think so.
He was just an underwhelming goalkeeper that looked great in Serie A, but when he got to the Premier League, and I guess the demands of a goalkeeper playing in front of that United defence and that United midfield in the Premier League under like Amorim, it just didn't really bode well for him. And it was a fair amount of money. And now we've got Lammens in for less money, younger, more unproven, but just immediately already better than basically anything Onana did at United. I mean, you laugh at that, but it, like, if you look at what Lammens has done so far this season in, what are we, match week 25, 26? Yeah, I think some teams are 26, some teams are 25. Lammens has done more already than Onana did for his entire time at United all competition.
Yeah, I mean, again, I just kind of give I give United a bit of a pass because I think it was okay. Like, it didn't work out, but a transfer that doesn't work out to me is more forgivable than a transfer that was never going to work out. You know, and I just think it could have worked out. Like, he was good the year before. He went to the Champions League final with Inter, and he'd been good at Ajax as well. Whereas, like Calvin Phillips to City as well, I remember people loving that at the time. People were really positive about that. They were like, hey, they need backup for, like, the most important position.
He's not
going
to play.
And he, sure, but, like, the fact he couldn't take any minutes was pretty shocking. Douglas Luiz, Villa to Juventus. Yeah, I hated that at the time, but like, it's not up there. I'm Joao Palhinha to Bayern for 51 million euros. The money's not insane. Well, it is for a player of that quality. But the money's not like crazy. But again, what's insane about that one is just that it was like so obviously bad. So obviously bad. It's like, oh, you know what? We're going to send this absolute like hatchet man shit kicker to one of the most cultured clubs in Europe. Let's see how this pans out. You know who we really need feeding Olise and Musiala? João Palhinha, who's got breeze block feet. It was so crazy to me. Like that was so stupid. I think Kolo Muani, though, to PSG.
Yeah.
I might put that up there. Because I remember at the time, and actually I remember arguing with Doogie about this, like a lot of people very pro Kolo Muani because he did have good goal and assist numbers in that one season at Eintracht Frankfurt. But the rest of his career, he had been no great shakes. Like he had a double figure goal season at like Nantes, but he had never been tremendous. He'd just been fine. And Eintracht had previous on this. Like Eintracht juice all their forwards and some of them are good, like Ekitike and I would say Marmoush. And some of them haven't worked out, like Jovic and Kolo Muani. PSG spent 80 million on him and he spent 1.5 seasons there before going on loan to Juve. Now he's been at Spurs. He's been absolutely horrific. Mm. Like my one positive thing when I tried to pitch this to Ted on the transfer flow is I was like,
well, if they Spurs move.
Yeah, like Kolo Muani to Spurs. I was like, maybe they think he can play the Brennan Johnson role, where it's like you don't touch the ball, but you just run into the back stick and you get a couple of high-value shots. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You get tap-ins. And I was like, in theory, he should be able to do that. And of course, you know, Johnson wasn't able to do that either. It's just like the attack totally cratered under Frank. It's possible that if Ange was still there, then those tap-ins would still have existed, but they don't anymore. But he's still, you know, under contract at PSG, he's on about 175k a week, which is nuts for a player outside the Prem. And the only way out is if Juventus come and buy him this summer, because Juventus have been talking about it after they had a decent loan with him last year. But nobody else will want him. He has been god-awful. And if I were Juventus at this point, I'd be like, I mean, Juventus shouldn't do it. But even if you're Juventus and you like him, they should at the very least be saying, oh, we want him for like nothing. But 80 million for that guy. And also, I just don't know what they wanted him to be. Like, again, it's a classic thing of buying a guy from a system that is just nothing like yours. When he arrived, they seemed absolutely uncertain whether he was going to be a winger for them or an attacking midfielder for them or a striker for them. They had absolutely no idea. And at Eintracht, it's okay for him to kind of do what he wants. It's okay for him to like push up and play in a two or to drop back into the midfield or to pull out wide. That's all right because it's Eintracht. But once you go to PSG are kind of saying, no, we have wingers for the winger stuff and we want strikers for the striker stuff and attacking midfielders for the attacking midfielder stuff. You don't just get to drift around the pitch unless you're Ousmane Dembele. And yeah, my friend, you are not Ousmane Dembele. So Kolo Muani, I think, is pretty disastrous.
I've just gone on his FB ref and obviously FB ref no longer has any advanced
any
data.
Information of any
yeah,
kind.
Any
yeah,
any worthwhile data. But what is quite funny with Randall Kolo Muani is when you go to the Spurs season so far, it's literally from goals to the end of the like summary, it's all zeros apart from yellow cards, which he has two. Every single metric is a zero. Goals, assists, like penalties, all of that stuff. Everything's just goose eggs in 1,000 minutes in the Premier League. Just goose eggs across the board apart from two yellow cards. Yeah. Impact. And he's 26 as well. Like he's slightly kind of old.
Yeah, he could be. If he were 24, it would kind of be okay.
I know, he gives me a bit of like the Jesse Lingard in that he feels like he should be about 5 years younger than he is. And everybody's kind of waiting for him to do something. He's like, Jean Santos, but like as well. Everybody's like, oh no, this player's got something about them. This player's like got that little like something special. Like honestly, like watch this player, like next season will be their season. And then that happens year on year on year. And then all of a sudden they're like 28. And you're like, so are we still waiting for this season to justify like £80 million price tags that people are saying are acceptable? Yeah, Muani kind of feels like that, a hype player that just never really hit any of the heights that anybody seems to have been. Like that one season you were talking about at Frankfurt, that was 22, 23, when he was 23 years old. That was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a bit seasons ago. And he's done very little since.
I don't know, when is he signed up to? That's a question. Let me check that out. Because he signed up till 2028.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got another 2 years after this.
At which point he'll be post-pick.
So not a good one. Not as expensive, nowhere near the level of these others, but a lot didn't quite make the cutoff. You know, like this is the last 5 years, it doesn't include Hazard to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
You don't get the really bad Joao Felix ones, though you do get Joao Felix to Chelsea.
Well, that one was stupid just because there was no fit for him. Why? They just didn't need to do it. Like, yeah, there was just no sense to it.
But in the end, they shifted him for completely decent money, and so it's kind of fine.
But Saudi bailed them out, I suppose. They got lucky without...
Yeah, but if you get bailed out, then it doesn't go on the worst transfers.
Yeah,
but,
you know, yeah. It's just but I, all I'm saying is that they got lucky for it not to be on that.
I agree. All right, I think that's that. Should we go on to the burnt book? All right, burn book time. You know what? I don't have a great entry today, so I might just leave my rant about like people's bin etiquette.
Sure.
Though the only other thing that comes to mind is I don't need to hear about American politics.
It's quite hard to avoid at the moment.
I understand that some of it is relevant, but we hear about so much of like the little stuff. Like Zohra Mamdani seems like a nice guy.
Yeah.
Why the fuck am I hearing about the mayor of New York? What a fucking non-entity. Like, it's just like nothing to do with anything. And Americans will not stop fucking going on about it. And I'm just like, you shut up about this, guys. There's always another, they're like, oh my God, have you heard about the runoff election? Oh, there's a midterm. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Constant nonsense about inconsequential little people all over their silly country. I don't care about any of these fucking people. And with Trump, it's always like, the news always has to report it as like very serious. It's like, oh, Donald Trump said this. It's like, Donald Trump just says like whatever's on his mind.
Literally.
Because he's fucking demented. Like, you can just ignore him and say, if I knew Donald Trump and he came and talked to me like this, I would say, come back to me when you're going to do something about it, you know? Because he just rabbits on a bunch of bullshit. Like, okay, hearing about what's going on with ICE, reasonable,
yeah,
newsworthy. Fair. But hearing about whatever Donald Trump has shat out of his diseased, worm-ridden brain, like, I just don't understand it.
The fucking, like, wing he's adding to the White House, the ballroom. Oh,
yeah, and they're just like, Donald Trump is a tasteless fuck. Look what he's done to the White House. It's like, fuck the White House. White House looks like shit anyway. Who cares? Like, just don't care. So all these people, I'm just constantly hearing about minor US politicians. And I think Americans think these people are important because they're American. And they're just not. And when it comes to Trump as well, you know, it's astonishing to me that there are genuinely some Americans who go on holiday and ask people what they think of Donald Trump as if there would be any debate on this question. Like, everybody's like, he's a fucking embarrassment. Like, yeah. He's a moron and a joke and he's a blight on your nation. Like, nobody takes him seriously. The only people who take him seriously in the UK are legit freaks. I mean, like, freaks.
Yeah.
And again, I think Americans think freaks means like half the electorate. But I mean, like, even right-wing people in the UK laugh at Donald Trump because he's a fucking joke. And so there's just, we're constantly asked to take these people seriously. And I just simply don't. Like, it's like America's like fucking president is Skeletor. Like, I just don't care. So I don't need to hear about it all the time. I don't need people talking about voting districts. I don't need them to talk about Republican gerrymandering. I don't need to talk about how actually this thing is a dog whistle. I don't give a fuck. Shut up. I don't need to hear about it incessantly. And now I spend more time on Blue Sky than Twitter because...
Twitter is bad.
Honestly, I go to Twitter and I send a post and
people
immediately like, shut up, you cunt. And I'm like, okay, well, see ya. But I go on Blue Sky and it's just fucking the world's... The people at school who, if you were talking at the back of the class, they crossed their arms and they said, like those fucking people. That is who's on Blue Sky. A bunch of fucking ummers. I hate those people. Or you pass a note in class and they're like, I'm telling. That's who's on Blue Sky. But they're all Americans. They're all American dweebs.
So Blue Sky is worse or better? Or just different?
It is better.
Is it apples and oranges?
It doesn't have Nazis on it, which is a pretty big plus in my book.
Yeah.
It just has annoying twats on it. Like, that is an improvement. Also, Blue Sky is actually useful. The reason I'm on them still is because of my work.
Yeah.
And Blue Sky is actually useful for my work in a way that Twitter is, like, unusable for work now. So I can follow people and see useful stuff on there. The problem is that everybody I follow is apparently in fucking New York, and they think that New York is important to the rest of the world, which, sorry, it isn't. It's a perfectly nice city. Yeah. Dumb. What are you putting in the burn book?
Mine's also American themed. So we're doubling down on American hatred here. What I'm putting in the burn book here is the American national anthem performances.
Man, we are seriously on some American slander today.
I mean, this is born out of the Super Bowl, which happened on Sunday night, just passed. I didn't watch it. But I mean, again, I don't care about American football, but I saw some things on social media afterwards. One of the things I saw was Charlie Puth's rendition of Star Spangled Banner. Ugh. And it made me think, like, what the fuck is up with American national anthem performances, and why has it been permitted to get so out of hand? Like, Americans, like, love their national anthem and play it relentlessly. Like, I'll die on a hill saying that 99% of the times that you hear the American national anthem, it's not necessary for it to be played in that scenario or at that event. They play it literally fucking everywhere. Start of a sports game.
Why before a sports game in America between two American teams do they need to play the national anthem? It's insane.
And it's not even like the sports game. It's not even like just the Super Bowl in the way that like Abide With Me is played at the FA Cup final. It's not like that one-off being
tuned into a game before the game starts.
This is our biggest spectacle where the world is watching and we're American, so we're going to like do this. I can kind of get on board with that. No, it's literally the start of every single game of every league, every professional sports league. They play the national anthem for no reason. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if there are countries turn up to like five aside after work and sing the national anthem before the kickoff. Like, it's that unhinged and it's that unnecessary. But it's not only is it unnecessary, it's in frequency. Why are there like artistic interpretations of it? Like, and also, why are the artistic interpretations not only like accepted, but like actually expected and encouraged? So Charlie Puth's rendition of Star Spangled Banner was fine. Like, musically, it was fine. Like, he is a talented musician who knows music and has a voice that is fitting of somebody who is a pop recording artist.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to hear the Star Spangled Banner as a pop song. Like, he's not looking to break into the top 40 with the Star Spangled Banner. Why are people adding like vocal riffs to a national anthem? Like, it's so, so bizarre. And Charlie Puth's one wasn't even like one of the bad ones. It was one of the more palatable ones that I've seen. Go and look up Fergie, right? Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas at the, I think it's a 2018 NBA All-Star game. Her rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. It's like fucking Marilyn Monroe doing Happy Birthday, Mr. President, but like way worse. It's like really difficult to watch. It's so bad. And I just don't know why there is this, why one is even accepted, but like why it's actually encouraged for these artists to come on and do their own spin of what is literally just a national anthem. Like, it should be instrumental, or it should just be like straight down the barrel. This is how it was written. We're singing it like as if this is a fucking music exam. That should be it. Because one, it shouldn't be at the start of every single event that ever exists in America. But if it is, it should be like in and out, efficiency. The song I looked up on Google apparently is 1 minute 19 seconds. Charlie Puth's rendition was 2 minutes. That's the kind of shit I don't need. In and out, 1 minute 20, get it done. This is just purely to tick a box. I do not need fucking... Like imagine a British equivalency would be like fucking... what's that guy called? Jacob Collier playing the like harpeggi at the start of Crufts for God Save the King. You know, imagine that shit and everybody in the crowd being like, no, this is great. You know, he's such a talented musician, and like the spin he put on God Save the King. Honestly. My God. On his like little harpeggi. It's so quirky, and he's just like such a lovely guy. I loved it. It was like 5 minutes long, but like I'm into it. Fucking unhinged. This is similar levels of unhingedness. And Charlie Puth at the Super Bowl was really quite far along on the spectrum of palatable versus some of the worst ones that you'll see out there. And because there's so many of them, there's so many opportunities for people in America to fuck up and just do things completely unnecessary and outlandish for something that shouldn't even exist at the start of games. And if it does, it should just be like, we are getting in and out as quickly as possible. Somebody should plug in their iPhone and just hit play. And then when it finishes, that should be the end of it.
You're right. There should be an agreed upon instrumental version that we use. And it just like goes, and like just honks it out. And then it's just like done. Like a polyphonic ringtone.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it should be. And because you're right. Everybody sees it. It's kind of like idiots on talent shows singing Hallelujah, where they're like, it's not enough to sing this song. I have to put my own bit of flavor on it. I have to put my own spin on it. No, shut up. Well, I mean, very similar, Hallelujah, to the American national anthem in that I don't want to hear you sing it. you shouldn't sing it. It's disgusting. So like, yeah, I agree. Like, I just find it kind of embarrassing that they sing it all the time. And you can't really convey this to an American when you're just like, but do you realize like how embarrassing it is that you play the national anthem before games? And they're like, oh, you know, like it's a bit silly, I guess. You're like, no, 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 no. Like, it's embarrassing. Yeah. It's embarrassing. Like, it's so silly. I don't get it. Because especially, God, no, it's just whatever. Silly. Bullshit. Agreed. Dumb. What am I taking out of the burn book this week? Taking meal prep out of the burn book.
Ooh.
So I'm dieting again, which is like, you know, kind of helpful because like, I wasn't able to work out for a while.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm on a diet again. And then I'll ease back into working out, you know, like as my hand kind of gets back up to like functional strength. And meal prep is one of those things that people tell you to do. And you're like, fuck that. What am I going to do? Get a bunch of fucking Tupperware, stack them up in my fridge. That's crazy. My fridge is full of children's snacks. It's full of like Baby Bells and shit.
Yeah.
Buy milk every day.
Blueberries. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, it's full of rubbish. But I've got to tell you, it is good. It is a good idea. It does make your lunch very convenient to be like, okay, here's this lunch. I know what it is. I know that it's satisfying. I know it's enough for me to be going on with. I know.
I assume you know the macros and all that stuff, so it's easy to track.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know the macros, so it just goes straight into my fitness pal. And yeah, it's just great not to think about, because there are so many times as well when I just wouldn't eat in the middle of the day. Or I'll be like, oh, I just need to grab something because I can't eat nothing because I know I'm about to go into a 3-hour shoot
or
something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also don't have time to make something. Meal prep. And so it's very annoying, but it is very useful. And not just meal prep of like full meals, but the other thing is vegetables. Like, so last couple of weeks I've been on a Sunday, because I can kind of do this now, my kids play together. I'll just chop up a bunch of vegetables and put them in Tupperwares. So, you know, like carrots, white cabbage, peppers, celery, you know, just like crunchy vegetables, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you don't have something to eat, or if you just want to add some veg to something, you can just add like a few spoons of extra vegetables to whatever you're having. You know, I can add it to the meal prep stuff that's like, you know, that Emma made today that was like, you know, bulgur wheat and a little bit of halloumi and some olives and stuff. Like, just like you add some vegetables to it and bulk it out, and it means you're getting those vegetables. Or you can just chuck all this stuff on top of a bunch of lettuce leaves and you've pretty much got a salad. Like, it'll do. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, it's a very boring, but it is effective. And actually, it does save me time. And
yeah,
it's very easy when you don't have time to start eating really badly. Not just badly as in the stuff you're eating is bad, but eating erratically or not eating enough one day, eating too much the next day. Like, crashing all the time because you're like, fuck, I'm tired because like I haven't eaten anything proper. And now I just need to like shove. You know, sometimes when you get that feeling where you're like, I'm snacking like 2 hours before a meal, before I'm going to have supper, but it's because I've got through to 5 o'clock without eating anything and I feel dead on my feet. Like, that kind of stuff. It really helps with that sort of thing. So yeah, it makes me feel like a boring grown up, but it is in fact quite good.
Yeah, I used, back when I lived in Belfast, I used to meal prep like relentlessly with this like one turmeric chicken rice dish that I used to just cook in like in fucking vats.
And man, that's pretty good.
Tupperware, and I would just do it on like Sundays, and you would always have a buffer of a few days. And yeah, it was I've been considering trying to get, Jess made this, like, you know, the Green Goddess salad thing.
Yes.
Jess made that the other week, and I was like, this is actually really simple. And I want to cut out mid-afternoon snacking on shit. So I was thinking I could just bulk make like a load of this, the parts of the Green Goddess salad, plus just bake like 8 chicken breasts on a Sunday and then just chop them up and put them in a Tupperware box. And then at like 4 p.m. when I get one a snack, I'll just concoct all the components of a little mini Green Goddess salad with chicken. And it won't be very carb heavy. It'll be protein, a decent protein hit. And there's like obviously avocado and stuff in it. It'll keep me through till dinner without being like, you know what, I'm just going to get like a bag of crisps or...
Yeah.
Or like one of these crap bars. Like there's loads of food available in the office, but it's always like the kind of processed bars. And so even like the healthier ones, quote unquote, are all just like refined sugar and all of that stuff. So that's been the plan for a couple of weeks. It's not materialized yet, but you know, there's always next week, Patrick. There's always next week.
There's always next week. All right. What are you putting in? What are you taking out, rather?
What I'm taking out, and I'm not convinced I haven't taken this out before. I think I've taken it out potentially in a different format, but we're going to roll with it. what I'm going to take out is being a curtain twitcher. I am one of, I'm convinced, I am convinced I am one of the world's premier curtain twitchers. Okay. If there's a Champions League for curtain twitching, I'd be in it. Like, I might not win it, but I also wouldn't be like Slavia Bumfuck getting slapped every week. And it's gotten to the stage where I know a really odd amount, and it's of like specifics and happenings of things that occur within like a 20 meter radius of the front and back of my house, and particularly like the patterns in which they occur and the personnel involved. I got a Ring doorbell at the front and a camera at the back, which I've spoken about. I think that's been about that's where the crossover is. I think that's been a burn brick entry or removal before. But also, our bedroom has a big window that sits over our front door. Mm-hmm. And my office, which I'm currently sitting in, looks out the back across all of the gardens that we back onto. And it's from the third floor. It's a loft extension. So you've got a real, like, a bird's nest view across, like, maybe 20 gardens. Plus the house is there. And like, none of this is creepy, but I mean, well, I guess people will be the judge of that. I don't think it's creepy, but...
Sounds a bit creepy.
I am very aware of what is going on, of all the happenings, of all the people that are coming and going in the area immediately around my house. And I only really noticed the level of knowledge that I had in the past few weeks because a couple of things have happened. So the first thing that happened was that just a couple of random people on a random Saturday afternoon turned up outside of our house to our neighbours. And I was sitting in the living room and I saw them arrive at our neighbour's door. And immediately I was like, that's strange. Those aren't people that our neighbours would socialise with.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, okay, right. And then basically, long story short, this was the catalyst for me realising that our neighbours are moving. So from that one little tidbit, I was like, they're not going to socialise with each other. So that's weird that they've gone in their house. Like, they've not only just arrived, like, they've gone in. And I know for a fact from living beside these people for a year and a half or 2 years that, like, these are never people that they would socialise with in any form. I've never seen them before. This is random. I wonder if they're here to view the house. Looked on Right Move. House was up for rent. So that was just from me sitting on the TV seeing a random person arrive. And I managed to almost immediately deduce that the house, because it wasn't like a to-let sign. There's never been, it's like a private owner. I don't know what its process is, but there's never been a to-let sign outside that house at any point that we've lived here. Yet we've had three different tenants live beside us. So there was that. And then the other one was that there's this elderly gentleman who lives across the road from us. And his health has been declining pretty steadily for the past few years. And one day an ambulance turned up a couple weeks ago and took him away. They weren't like rushing, there wasn't blue lights. It didn't seem like massively serious. It was just like something that he's at that age and he's in ill health, so it was like I wasn't overly shocked by it. But a person that we believe to be his nephew was there. And then a couple of days later, like arrived again at his house in his Porsche. So I remember his car as well. He went into the house for like 5 minutes, came out with like a pair of trousers that he binned. And another couple of like little items. So I was like, okay, maybe our neighbor like had a fall, had to wait a bit, and there was like either blood or, you know, he ended up kind of like having to go to the toilet, but he couldn't get himself off the ground. He was just waiting for like assistance.
Okay.
Maybe it's something like that. And then he drove off, and nobody has been at the house since in the last 2 weeks. So I'm now in the kind of thought process of thinking, okay, maybe our neighbor has. He could still be in hospital or whatever, but he could also be put into some form of like assisted living. And know that that house is potentially going to be going up for sale. And this is all just from me. I've no real connection with either of those two people. We kind of slightly became de facto carers for, not carers, but like the go-to people to help the elderly gentleman out, because one day in 2022, we were the last people in the street with our lights on, and he locked himself out at like 4 p.m. and just didn't try and do anything until like 11 p.m.
Okay.
And then knocked on our door being like, can I stay the night at yours? And we were like, no, but we'll phone a locksmith. And he's like, I don't have any money. And we were like, well, we'll phone the police then. And they basically helped him break into his house. But he ended up having a key safe on his, like, outside his house, which we now know the code to. So and he's only done it like 4 times since across 5 years, but we can just open his door for him. But that's our only contact with him ever. But I knew a weird amount about his like movements, and the thing that made me realize that he hasn't come back since is because he always goes on daily walks. You'll always see him kind of like pottering about down the street, which hasn't happened since the ambulance came. So I think he might have, you know, been put into some form of assisted living. But I wouldn't know any of this thing, any of this stuff. I reckon Jess is completely oblivious to everything I just said. But I know the entire playbook of every single thing happening on my road, at least within the like 20 meter radius, like 4 or 5 doors down and up, every single thing I know. And it's and you know what? I'm not standing at the window for hours on end. It's just being observant. It's just recognizing patterns. It's just wondering, being like, oh, that's a new car. I've not seen that car before in the street. Why is that here? And maybe you'll never see it again because people can come and pay to park on the street. But it'd be quite strange because our street's a horseshoe with a builder's merchant at the end. It's a one-way street. The only reason to go down it is to go either if you live there or if you want to go to the builder's merchants. So there's no real reason to park on the street for long periods of time if you don't live on it. And if I've not seen your car on the street and it appears like outside our house, I'll be like, that's interesting. But yeah. Next level, professional grade curtain twitching.
I mean, yeah, you're pretty sophisticated at it. Like, do you think that you've developed a good nose for like the moments when shit's about to go down?
Well, the thing about, I don't know, sound carries down our street quite well. So this is actually quite ironic, right? So sound carries down our street incredibly well. So any happening, I'm, you know, anytime I hear a little noise, I'm like, bang, I'm either on the Ring doorbell or I'm up at the window just to see like what it is. Usually the Ring doorbell, because I'm like, I don't want to commit to the bit at this stage because it's likely just somebody, you know, walking by or just having a conversation a little bit loud on the phone or whatever. But if it does merit, you know, in-person visuals, I'll get up to the window and have a peek around the curtain. So I am quite sensitive to that. But ironically, the one time that fucking shit actually went down on our street, didn't wake up, didn't twitch at all. I had no idea until the next day. We were in the middle of an extension in like 2022. And basically some guy had, there's this, like some estate like 4 or 5 miles away from us, had stabbed a guy on his like door, like rang his doorbell. He opened the door, they stabbed him, jumped in the car, raced off. And I believe, potentially being like chased by the police, for whatever reason, they turned down our street. Stupid decision. Like I said, Horseshoe Street. You can only go down the street and you end up 20 meters back on the same road that you exited on. Stupid decision. They ended up crashing like 40, 30 meters from our house into a parked car, all bailed out of the car and then like started jumping through all the gardens to get away. The knife was deposited in one of our neighbor's gardens. And like, this is the only time that anything ever similar, close to that, has ever happened on our street. And me, a grade A quick curtain twitcher, slept through the entire thing.
Yeah, that's a tragedy.
And I'm a incredibly light sleeper as well. So yeah, it's that's the one that got away, that scenario.
Yeah, I do feel for you with that. You know, that doesn't seem right that you missed out on that.
The police came to the door the next day, being like, "Do you have any information?" And I'm like, "No, like I've got nothing for you, bro. Nothing."
Yeah,
I should have like a full A4 binder of profiles of everybody, but you know, unfortunately, I got nothing.
Embarrassing for you. Yeah. Embarrassing for you to miss out that way.
They literally crashed their car into another car 20 meters from our bedroom window, and I didn't wake up. The only way we actually found out was when it was in the middle of all work from home stuff. I went to, or Jess, I think, went to the shop in the morning to get milk. And, oh no, it was the builders. It was because we were in the middle of extension. The builders phoned us at 7 a.m. being like, "We can't get up your street." And we were like, "What?" And they're like, "Yeah, police have cordoned it off. There's like a murder investigation." So we were like lying in bed being like, "What the fuck?" Yeah.
Absolutely insane. All right. I think that wraps us for today. Thank you very much for all the questions you submitted. Look, it's so funny that these are such like middle-aged dad things that we've had in the burn, but today where it's just like, I love to I hate it when someone puts something in my bin. I love to
snoop on my neighbors.
I love to meal prep and snoop on my neighbors. Like, it's fucking deranged. But if you've enjoyed this podcast, please do let us know. Thank you very much for subscribing. Those of you that do, we will catch you over on the paid side. Please get your questions in for the next edition of the podcast. Right now, obviously, we're waiting for the Champions League to come back. That won't be back until early. No, it will be back in late February, I think. But, you know, the round of 16 will be in early March. But we appreciate you being here and we really want your input on the podcast. So send us your questions. We will see you all next time. Thank you. Bye.